Mobi.co, this is the Flagship Pod, a weekly podcast about the stock market, the economy, and the various market forces powering the world around you. I'm your host, Peter Starr, bringing you this time just a little something different. Today I'm bringing you a conversation I had with our friend Chris Rowley, CEO over at Harvest Returns, talking about agribusiness and the overall agricultural outlook we're seeing in American investing right now. Harvest Returns is an alternate investment fund that allows their clients to invest in various agribusinesses, from individual ranches to ag tech to a lot of really interesting aspects of the agriculture industry right now. So it's a great way to understand all the really on-the-ground developments that are happening in agribusiness when food inflation is finally starting to go down and we're starting to really understand the complexities of all the food we have to produce over the next 50 years. It's a really cool conversation, and I'm really excited for y'all to check it out. So let's just go ahead and get into it. Now, folks, we're joined by Chris Rowley, CEO of Harvest Returns, an honest-to-God legend in the agribusiness sector. Chris, thank you so much for joining us. How are you today, man? Where are you calling in from?
I'm doing terrific. Hey, Peter, I'm calling from our headquarters in Fort Worth, Texas.
Let's go. Love getting more of that Mid-South perspective, but let me get into the actual reasons we wanted to talk to you today, because our audience is all trying to figure out some alternative investment strategies. So the main question our audience has is we're trying to understand the agribusiness side of this equation. Can you just real quick tell me about Harvest Returns and how you play that game, and we'll get into the actual agribusiness sector moving forward?
Sure. Harvest Returns is a company that I started with my partner back in 2016. We're a platform for people to invest in agriculture. And when I say agriculture, that's a pretty broad space, which we'll get into that some specifically, but farms, ranches, agribusinesses, any kind of company related to farming.
Which is a concise introduction to what is honestly a very broad sector, because a lot of people in the investing space kind of don't understand just how sprawling and diverse agribusiness is right now. So just kind of getting into the sector itself, when you're looking at this, what are those big areas of investment that are gaining momentum right now in the agribusiness sector? I think a lot of our audience is going to be surprised of the kind of mix we see. What are the games we're playing right now?
Yeah, it's a sector that's very much driven by consumer preference and demographics and changing demographics. And so right now, that means that people have very fragmented diets. So things like either vegetarian or vegan, or just the opposite, the high protein, carnivore sort of diets. In the U.S., at the same time, across the world, obviously the population continues to grow, and the calorie demands and demands for protein are growing faster even than the population of the world. And so what that's really driving in this business is the need for protein production. You hear a lot about alternative proteins, things like plant-based proteins and things like that, but also just pure animal-based protein, which is one of the areas that we put a lot of our emphasis on.
And I think that's a big surprise for folks, because when we think about the kinds of investment that get a lot of play in terms of the media, we're thinking a lot about more of those plant-based metrics. We hear about the difficulties that may surround more ranching, more sort of old school protein production. But given that demand is so high, the sort of guarantees you get from ranching are a lot more important, because within the growing calorie needs of the world we have, protein is going to be a huge part of that as some of the biggest population centers in the world, India, China, and Africa, begin developing a lot more across the next 15 to 20 years. Not only are we going to be feeding a lot more people, but we're going to be feeding a lot more of the middle class globally. Is that a good way of thinking about it, or am I kind of oversimplifying there?
No, that's exactly right. I mean, part of the whole food equation in agriculture is food security. And obviously in the developing world, food insecurity is experienced much more so than we have in the United States. And so food affordability is very important, as well as the sustainability, the environmental impacts of producing larger amounts of food and calories and protein. So that's kind of what's helped shape our portfolio, is those dynamics.
And as you've been constructing that portfolio, like obviously we talk a lot about ranching, we're going to be talking a lot about the tech industry within this space as well. Is protein sort of like the North Star we're thinking about in terms of what we're trying to produce, or are there other interesting growth areas that you're having a lot of success in as getting sort of outsized returns from the investments you're making at Harvest Returns?
Yeah, protein is a central part of our portfolio, animal protein, but there are other areas that we're involved with, one of those being controlled environment agriculture or indoor farming. It's another broad space, but we're talking about things like large-scale greenhouses, but also vertical farms, urban farms. It's an area that's had some challenges the past several years. there was I would say overinvestment maybe back in the late teens, early 2020s. And now that those companies have been shaken out and we're starting to see some profitable business models emerge where, you know, there were some mistakes made, but the need to grow food closer to where it's consumed is very important. And there's several reasons for that. One is just environmental footprint, where you're using less energy to transport that food. For example, most of the leafy greens, the lettuce, things like that, that we eat in the United States are all produced in Salinas Valley, California. It's over 70%, and it's shipped across the U.S., even to the East Coast. And that consumes a lot of energy, results in a lot of food waste. And so being able to grow lettuce in a greenhouse in, say, New England, where that greenhouse is powered by its own local energy source, cogeneration facilities, that sort of thing, is something we're seeing a lot more of. There's quite a number of those facilities popping up across the United States, as well as smaller vertical farms in urban areas. That's a little more challenging because you've got some things, you know, electricity costs were probably underestimated when those initial farms were set up, and labor costs were also underestimated. And now that the business models are starting to adjust, we're seeing more potential with those smaller urban or suburban farms.
And it's one of those things too, where we have watched the entire economy kind of grow up from like 2019 to now as well. Like, a lot of really wacky fantasies were powering sort of the investment environment in like the late teens, like the D2C revolution in particular, outside of that, but then within like the agribusiness sector as well, just like some really, really lofty goals specifically for vertical farming, like, you know, skyscraper sized buildings that could feed, you know, a whole city block, that sort of thing. What is sort of the adult ag tech business when it comes to local farming look like? Is it just a bunch of greenhouses, you know, spread out across a certain area that makes sure it can focus on several localities within New England, or is it people trying to get more centralized with sort of massive vertical farming facilities? Obviously, the real game is logistics. Like, shipping from the Salinas Valley in California is extraordinarily expensive, and just getting those shipping costs out of the way is gigantic. So when you are trying to actually be profitable here, though, is it building skyscraper-sized vertical farms, or what's the sort of adult version of how that's going to play out as we focus on more of a local model for growing food?
Yeah, I think it all comes down to what the market is, what you're selling. And those vertical farms, some of them had some challenges because just the cost of electricity increasing. And I think it's starting to go back down now. I think the long-term trend is renewables come online, more alternative energies for electricity to go down. But given, you know, COVID and the spike in prices, inflation and things like that, or input costs, that made some of those urban vertical models, vertical farming models, unsustainable. So then we saw the greenhouse side pick up some steam, but those have their own challenges as well with labor and things like that. So the industry is still in a shakeup, but I think we'll start to see more smart money coming into that. And there's that same cycle of overinvestment happened on the plant-based protein side as well. A lot of those companies, they thought they were going to have a much more significant market than they did. And it turns out that they were producing food for a very niche sort of market, that plant-based, you know, meats, essentially. Turns out people that like meat like animal meat, and people that like that are vegetarian like their vegetables. They don't like vegetables disguised as meat. So it was kind of a bad marketing assumptions that went into that. And we're seeing that industry take companies like Beyond Meat and Impossible Burger have fallen precipitously from their valuations just a few years ago.
Exactly. And to, you know, level with you, I got really caught up in the lab grown meat phase that happened more like on the 2019 side of things. There were a lot of really exciting moments where we thought we could just, you know, grow chicken breast essentially. We can. It's just super expensive. So I thought that was going to scale much faster than it did. So I'm right there with you in terms of just watching this industry grow up. And as we think about that, getting back to the protein question, we kind of focused on plant-based protein. We talked a little bit about ranching. But one thing that I've seen a lot within Harvest Returns as well is a focus on indoor aquaculture. That's just like farming fish, right? How is that playing out in terms of a good source for sustainable protein needs? Is fish also part of the future?
Yeah, I mean, this is an area, indoor aquaculture is an area that we've invested in, both fish farms and shrimp. And we see quite a few deals, and we'll be having, you know, additional offerings related to this coming this year and probably in the foreseeable future. But it's growing. And the reason indoor aquaculture is growing is twofold. One, just fisheries, ocean wild caught fisheries are unsustainable. Fish stocks are collapsing all over the world due to overfishing, illegal fishing, unlicensed, unregulated fishing. And so then the initial alternative people looked at was in situ fish farming, meaning, oh, you're just going to put a pin up in the ocean and throw a bunch of tuna in there, or we're going to dam off this part of the estuary or river and grow some sort of vision there. The problem with those is they have created some significant environmental issues, such as invasive species, introduction of invasive species, pollution, because you're basically constantly feeding these fish in an enclosed area and all that pollution is running off into the natural ecosystem. So there's momentum right now behind this indoor aquaculture, or it's also called recirculating aquaculture systems. Essentially, think of aquariums is more or less the analogy, but done in a very high-tech manner and in scale, where you're growing fish or shrimp or other products in an enclosed area in a warehouse, something like a salmon. We've also done a farm down in Florida, Pompano Farm. So you're doing both freshwater and marine species in these facilities. And because it's produced much more sustainably, the market that you can get for the seafood is they can take a premium. The challenge with these is sort of like indoor farming, is that they're very capital intensive. So they need capital and investment up front, but we think over the long term, they're going to be very successful businesses.
Absolutely. And that's a really important part of this as well. Like when you're in more of like the alt space, there's a lot of really interesting areas of development that can provide strong returns moving forward. And that's why you as an investor work with a partner like Harvest Returns to get access to some potential high upside opportunities, as well as just simply more sustainable returns. I'll get into more of that in a second. But as we look into some of these developmental plays we're trying to make, I think one thing our audience is super interested in as well is other areas of your investment, thinking about precision agriculture and agricultural technology, things that go beyond individual projects. How are we sort of evolving the agribusiness space to develop better precision agriculture and develop the ag tech industry? What is that looking like right now? Is there anything in that part of the industry that's really exciting to you?
Yeah, it was 3 or 4 years ago, we started making these investments in early stage ag tech companies. We started with just farms and ranches, and then we saw a need for capital in a space to provide our investors with access to these early stage, high growth, scalable businesses. And so what's exciting, you mentioned precision agriculture, that can be loosely defined as applying various types of ag technology, whether that's GPS or drones or satellite surveillance, to use a higher level of precision to grow crops and to manage crops. So whether that's using those to apply less fertilizer or apply fertilizer more precisely, so you have less waste, less runoff, less pollution. Same thing with herbicides. We're investing in a company that it's really interesting. It's got carbon monitoring sensors that are in the ground, and they're helping farmers measure carbon to secure carbon credit that their crops are sequestering. Also, that same company has an application for vineyards where they can measure up in, you know, California's got a wildfire problem, and they can measure smoke taint on vineyards. So instead of having to like basically mow over an entire vineyard, they can just find out where that smoke tainted the grapes and just get rid of that one small portion of the crop. So things like that make farming more sustainable and more profitable. And there's really a lot of momentum in agriculture and ag tech right now. There's also, you know, a whole space of biologics. So this is using biology rather than synthetic fertilizers to control pests, fertilize, assist with crop growing without the synthetic chemicals. So that's a really interesting one we're looking at right now as well.
And that biologic side, that's just like ecosystem design, right? It's like just like monocropping. You just have sort of like the symbiotic other organisms, either plants and or insects, to keep like the pest insects away, right?
No, that's a great way. I think in the past several years, there's been significant research on just microbiomes in the soil. Fungi is very, very important to healthy soil. That, you know, it sounds like common sense, but that's pretty new development. And so better understanding the biology of these soils and the interaction with the watersheds and of course the air and the plants and the biodiversity and all those sorts of things are kind of a more holistic approach to growing crops that hasn't been done. Well, really, it's kind of back to the future because, you know, 200 years ago, they may not have understood the science behind it, but they understood sort of the natural processes. And now after the sort of industrial revolution in agriculture and chemical revolution, in the 1950s and 60s, we're going back to that more holistic method of farming.
Because ultimately, that's a way to create efficiency too. Like industrialized agriculture and sort of like the nitrogen capture revolution kicked off 100 years ago has made it so we can have a planet with like 6 billion people. But this is now a game of margins in terms of getting as much profit from this as possible. And audience, as you're listening to this, it's kind of the same play you're watching across the whole market. Like we kind of brute forced the whole economy. We just threw massive waves at people at very large problems and just kind of hoped
things worked out. And in the era of cheap credit, it really did. But now in the 20s, we all have to be adults. We have to focus on this efficiency. And so rather than thinking about biologics and ecosystem design as this sort of like ESG thing, as sustainability, it's also an efficiency play because it helps make every investment in fertilizer you make go a lot further. And I think that's something that's kind of missed in this conversation too. Like we have a lot more calories to make. It's going to go up a lot more, and we need to do this in a way that we don't completely like destroy the topsoil worldwide. And so, Chris, again, this has been an awesome conversation so far. Just looking over the space here, I've loved sort of like exploring the lay of the land in agribusiness, but what's like most exciting for you moving forward? Like, you've got a lot of really good portfolio companies. You're doing everything from funding ranches down in Texas to helping companies turn food scraps in New York City into like sustainable local grown mushrooms. There's so much good stuff going on here. Like, what's the stuff that really excites you as you sort of sit down with potential portfolio companies and you're like, yeah, that's the stuff I can't wait to get to my group of investors?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to continue to sort of make investments in these verticals, some of which we mentioned: the aquaculture, the indoor farming, ag tech, regenerative protein, regenerative grazing for livestock, primarily cattle, but we've also done bison and sheep. Those are things that are exciting to us. But you know, what kind of drives us and creates passion for us in this business is just working with these farm families. Most farms, there's a little bit less than 2 million farms in the United States. So we've got a very small piece of the population feeding essentially the rest of the country. And I think the average urban dweller doesn't have much appreciation for agriculture. And so part of what motivates us is connecting investors and more people with the food system and the people who produce it. And that's rewarding because we see, you know, these farms with great ideas and execution, and all they lack is capital. And then we're able to bring in that capital through our investors and help them do their little part in transforming food and how it's produced and all the positive impacts that come from that.
Exactly. And I think when you really think about it, it's been such a fast transition from the majority of people's work being feeding the rest of the world to it being literally less than 1% of the U.S. population taking care of like the growing and dissemination of food for nearly 400 million people at this point. That will always blow my mind, just how fast we transitioned from a majority agrarian civilization to extreme minority. And what I like about that is that we've kind of had our moment where industrialized agriculture, you know, did all of the heavy lifting to make sure that people got fed and people got fed well and on time. And now we're going to find efficiencies within that system across the next 5, 10, 15 years to make sure that it can keep happening and that we don't see like sort of the fallout that comes from, again, just kind of brute forcing an ecosystem by just dumping as much, you know, glyphosate and whatever on it to make sure things can still grow. And so that's really exciting to see those efficiencies creep out. And it's really, you know, just amazing that firms like Harvest Returns exist to make sure that capital gets to these great efficiencies with potentially great cash flows that are just in need of a little bit of capital. So I guess, Chris, the main thing I want to make sure my audience knows about is a lot of us are in that investing space. We're thinking about alt investments given the equities market running a little bit hot. What kind of investors are you looking for to join the portfolio, and how can folks hear more about Harvest Returns and get in touch with your team?
Yeah, great question. First place to start, obviously, for us is our website. And we've got, you know, we're on social media. Part of our job, I think, is to educate investors about these opportunities, this asset class, because it's something that most people haven't invested in. You know, most people have a basket of stocks or ETFs or, you know, individual stocks they like. And some of those might even cross into the ag space. Like, you know, maybe somebody's got John Deere in their portfolio because it's just a great stock. But to actually invest directly into farms and ranches is, in other small agribusinesses, is completely new to a lot of people. And we are looking for investors that are, you know, willing to deploy some of their capital into a space they may not be completely familiar with, but to do it in a way that's educated and with managed risk. And, you know, our investments, for the most part, you've got to have a little bit of capital up front. You know, we start at $5,000 or $10,000 for most minimums, which is, you know, significant, but it also allows people to take that portion of their portfolio and maybe apply it in two or three or four different companies to spread out that allocation a little bit. You know, if somebody decides maybe they want to allocate 20% of their portfolio into alternative assets and including ours, there's a way to manage the risk and basically invest in what you want to invest in rather than just dumping it all in your 401k into the S&P 500. Of course, there's nothing wrong with that, but this is a little bit more self-directed.
Especially now, considering that we're looking at the possibility of a higher for longer rate environment and we're trying to get past some of the larger issues that creates. If you're focusing on the individual business level rather than investing directly in Deere is going to have a tough road ahead of them as they deal with a broad number of clients, just not doing as much of an investment because of capital constraints, but sort of bypassing that and getting directly into funding these smaller businesses, funding these smaller farmers. That's a way to get access to this space without sort of the larger systemic risk that come from directly investing in publicly traded agribusinesses. And that's why I'm excited about it. But again, I do have biases. I was raised in this space. So I'm really just glad I got this chance to talk to you, Chris. Any final thoughts from you? Anything you think we missed? Is there anything else you want folks to know about sort of agribusiness as we move forward? Or you think we kind of nailed it in terms of just getting the lay of the land and getting a better sense of what's actually going to move the needle in the agribusiness space over the next couple of years?
No, it's a really, really good conversation, Peter. I just ask investors to, if they don't know much about agriculture, they don't think much about it, it impacts them. It impacts every person on earth. And spend a little time just digging into it and looking into some of the opportunities there for investment.
Exactly. It's a really exciting world, and I'm really glad we got folks to get sort of an interesting look into it. So either way, Chris Rowley, CEO of Harvest Returns, really appreciate your time, man. Thanks so much for being here with us. Audience, as always, you can check out the links in our bio to get more understanding of what's happening at Harvest Returns. Either way, man, thanks so much for your time. You have a great day, all right?
Thanks, Peter.
And once again, huge thanks to Chris Rowley from Harvest Returns for coming onto the show. Again, folks, feel free to check out harvestreturns.com to get a better sense of how you, an individual investor, can also be a part of the on-the-ground agriculture revolution we're seeing right now. Otherwise, that's going to be a good place for us to end it. Just so you know, audience, this podcast is produced, hosted, and voiced by me, Peter Starr. All of the sort of intellectual value our podcast has comes from our analyst team, which is headed up by our CEO and co-founder, Justin Kramer. If you ever have any questions for us, you can always feel free to email us at hello@mobi.co. Check us out over on Instagram as we give you more of an on-the-ground look of what's happening day by day in the markets. Otherwise, we really appreciate your time, and as always, we'd like to leave you with peace, love, and incremental gains. Everyone be well. Thank you so much.